Robert Vitelli tells me he's a best-selling author. He's been in the motivational field for a lot of years with a lot of famous people we've all seen on TV. And he's going to talk to us about how some of what he learned and does can benefit all of us. So I'll give you Robert Vitelli.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, man. What I'd like to do is just start off with a short guided meditation for a couple minutes, kind of start our day. So if everybody could take a deep breath. At least, good morning, my name is Rob, and I'm an adult child. Okay, take a deep breath with me. And close your eyes or keep them open, whatever is most comfortable. Take another deep breath. Let's take one more deep breath. We'll start with the prayer. Dear God, we surrender this day to you. We surrender our thoughts. Our feelings and perceptions and reactions. We ask that you guide us in everything that we do today. Amen. It's interesting, as putting together this talk for surrender, I realized I had to surrender my talk about surrender. And being involved with the motivational field was really actually my addiction, which was interesting because I had a chance to, like many of us, not be brought up with a father figure. And I looked for father figures in a lot of different areas of life as a way of actually not feeling, to push my feelings down. I didn't want to feel my pain and my sadness and my grief and my terror. And so what I did was I looked for, and didn't quite go the drug route. I went a little bit more socially acceptable drug route of endorphins, you know, working with motivational speakers like Tony Robbins and Zig Ziglar, and learning how to empower myself. It's about as best Tony Robbins impression you're going to get today. And they're great guys. The information is absolutely phenomenal, obviously. I think we need positive thinking in our lives, especially when I'm such a master at beating myself up. Except when it comes to not feeling, you know, is using my motivational tools and my affirmations and a lot of these, what I call mental gymnastics and mental martial arts, just to not feel my pain. So much of my path has been around learning what this process and this principle, or I like to call it, it's a skill of surrender. And I'm an absolute beginner. I fail miserably every single day in learning to love myself through my failures and stumbling blocks and stumbles. And once in a while, I get those glimpses of wins. And the light shines through for me more and more as I work this program and work on my recovery. So I'm going to talk about surrender in three specific areas so we can really drive it deep and hopefully serve you in a way that maybe gives you some tools and some distinctions and some ideas that you can use in your daily recovery work, in your own personal path, in your relationships especially, as well as the relationship, of course, with yourself. So I'm going to talk about how surrender relates to feelings, first of all, and how we deal with our feelings, how we're working with this principle of surrender, as well as how surrender affects our reactions, our habitual reaction patterns. And talking about surrendering our habitual reactions, or as I'm such a master at, my overreactions, as well as how surrender relates to our higher power. How do we work with our higher power? And it's probably one of the most simple, yet the most vague and ambiguous lessons for me in my path is working with my higher power and learning how to surrender these things. And I found some tools I'm going to share with you through these discoveries and through some of the ideas that I'd come across that really helped support my recovery path. But what I want to do is start with surrender, because first of all, most of the time, I don't know what the heck surrender means.
I don't. And so I started looking through about 10 different dictionaries, you know, not too long ago. And I said, let's define what surrender is first. And let me start there, because the origin of the word, I love to clear a word this way, came from 1425 through 1475 out of the late Middle English word surrendren and the Old French word surrendre, which means to give up, or to the equivalent of sur plus render, to render, to render. Some definitions. To agree to stop fighting, hiding, or resisting. To give the control of or use of something to someone else. To allow something, such as a habit or a desire or a reaction, to influence or to control you. To yield to the power, control, or possession of another upon compulsion or demand. To give up completely. To give up completely. Or agree to forego, especially in favor of another. To give oneself up into the power of another. To give oneself up to some course of feeling or emotion or other influence. To give up, abandon, or relinquish. To resign in favor of another. To give oneself up physically, as in or as if to an enemy, which I'm such a master at thinking surrender is about an enemy, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So it's interesting, because coming through some of these definitions of surrender, one of the things that it actually presupposes was that we are resisting something if we're not surrendering. We're warring or fighting some inner battle, some outer battle, which is the antithesis. It's the opposite of surrender. So in my own path, of course, I was, and many of us habitually will tend to react as if I was reacting to, you know, my controlling mother, who would, of course, have her ways of putting me into submission through, you know, the insults and through the various things that we were brought up in an abusive household, emotionally or physically. And of course, it created this incredibly powerful defense mechanism inside of me. The exact opposite of a feeling of surrender, that's for sure. So what I'm going to talk about first is how surrender relates to feelings before I talk about our reactions and how surrender applies to it. So one of the biggest things, and it was great because Nancy M., who was here yesterday, which is incredibly, if you were here, anybody here for Nancy's workshop yesterday? It was beautiful. Wasn't it amazing? Oh, love Nancy, a close friend and just an amazing teacher. And so much of what we had talked about yesterday was feelings as it relates to how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about other people, our relationships, but more importantly, our relationship with ourselves. And what I want to talk about in the context of surrender is how we feel about our feelings. Because I have certain judgments. I mean, there's just certain feelings I really like, and there's just certain feelings I really don't like, and I don't want to experience them. I try everything I can do habitually not to feel them. And that's where my mental gymnastics, my mental martial arts came into play. So what I'd found was inside of me, and of course, you know, a lot of us call it an inner critical parent or our internal critical attitudes. I actually call it, for me, how I define it is an inner judge. That there's this inner judge. Now, for me, it's a visual. I see personally, you know, a really old dude with the long curly hair, you know, with the anvil. Wait, you know what the funny thing is? There was a gosh darn anvil behind this bench. I was like, it was perfect. So this is how I see my inner judge. And he's wearing a black robe. And all of a sudden, I'll be, you know, through my day going on, and all of a sudden, I'll have some type of uncomfortable feeling come up, and I'll judge it automatically as bad and something that I don't want to experience, and I'll immediately start trying to change how I feel. And I have got a list of about 100 tools to not feel. And habitually, in my personal growth path, I would try to make myself feel better. I'd be using affirmations. I'd be using guided meditations. I'd be using self-hypnosis. I'd be working with physiology. I'd be doing yoga. I'd be doing martial arts. I would be doing everything, workshop after, I mean, literally hundreds and hundreds of workshops. I've probably spent close to $1 million on personal growth workshops, without exaggeration. Amazing investment. I think the best investment we have is ourselves, but for me, you like that butt, huh? All of it was prior to my recovery. So this inner judge, for me, I had found was, of course, the voice of my inner critical parent, the voice of my mother, that I absorbed because of her critical parent of how she treated herself and how she still treats herself. She's a functioning alcoholic. And what I realized was this judgment of feeling, this judgment of my emotions was inherited. It wasn't something that, you know, we're typically taught to do, but it's something that we inherited, this habitual pattern of judging our feelings, judging what's going on within us in our emotional life, was antiquated, it's outdated, maybe slightly dysfunctional way of handling and dealing with our feelings. And surrender, for me, as it relates to feelings, was surrendering how I felt about feelings and how I feel about feeling, surrendering the habitual judgment of my feelings. And one of my teachers that I had a chance to work with in my late teens before she was very, very big is Marianne Williamson. And Marianne teaches on A Course in Miracles, which is a spiritual psychology path, and it's just some phenomenal tools. But one of the things I love about her teachings was the categorization of all of our feelings and emotions into two major emotions that everything breaks down into, and it's either love or fear. And when I started to look at that perspective, it really gave me some distinctions about how to deal with my own feelings as they were coming up and how to surrender this inner judge. And so much of it for me, you ever feel bad about feeling bad? Yes. Now this is insidious, okay, because it's like all of a sudden I'm being critical of myself. And then I go, oh God, you're being critical of yourself again. God dang it. So I'd be critical of myself about being critical of myself. Now that's insidious. Okay, I don't care who you are. That's some tricky, deep, you know, wow. So the fascinating thing about this was it took a daily practice. I couldn't think about tomorrow. Just today, in here speaking with you, of course, I speak a lot in motivation and personal growth, a lot of sales and marketing work, so I have a very specific structure about how I'm going to talk, and I was like starting to feel a little bit anxious about talking with you today. How can I best serve, you know, my fellow brothers and sisters in ACA, and how can I best serve you? And all of a sudden, I had these very uncomfortable feelings coming up, and I was like, wait a minute, I don't want to feel uncomfortable, I don't want to feel anxious, I want to talk, I want to serve. It started going into that little diatribe in my head again, and I went, I guess I need to surrender that too. So this inner judge and how it applies to love and fear is the tool that I've found that I use on a daily basis, because when a feeling comes up within me now, or I notice myself being really kind of harsh on myself, I get a chance to stop and I just do a quick 2-second prayer and go, I surrender this reaction and my judgment of my feelings. I take the judge, and in my own mind, what I see sometimes, if I have a few seconds, I'm not in the middle of a work day, or I could take a lunch break, I actually see this judge with the long, curly, braided hair in the robe, and I see him in a chair, and I see him slowly floating up into the heavens. And I surrender and use that type of guided imagery to surrender my inner judge to Source, to infinite intelligence, to God, and giving that judgmental part of myself, it's judging myself, which is part of my disease, and surrendering it and giving it upon, up to, my higher power and say, please deal and help me with this. In that moment, I have a slight break in sanity. I had a slight, I should say, glimpse of sanity because I'm stopping and pausing for a moment and I'm catching myself in this unconscious pattern that I'm not aware of judging my feelings and making them wrong. So awareness being the first distinction, but the second one, which of course that I think many of us have heard of, is the master skill when dealing with our feelings. And it was the exact opposite of what I was taught to do, instead of empowering myself, to accept. Acceptance. Acceptance, I have found, for me, is the master skill for all of us. For definitely my path, when I'm starting to feel this inner judge or my inner critical parent. And now, for me, it's not even verbal anymore. For me, it's just a reaction. It's just like, get that habitual knee-jerk reaction if I'm not doing something good enough, or I don't feel that I'm good enough, or I'm not quite acting nice enough, or whatever I might be doing. And in that moment, when I can remember and have the awareness to accept even my judgment. So another part, I think, of surrendering is accepting whatever feeling, whatever judgment that I'm going through in the moment. And it's interesting because, again, nobody ever taught, I heard, you know, the Red Book talks about surrender. If you look in the glossary, about 10 or 11 different times, and I've read every section on it at least two or three times, but it doesn't say how to surrender. It says, surrender to a higher power. We should surrender. But I go, how the heck do you do it? Through acceptance is one of the distinctions I found for surrender to really support my path. To surrender into the feeling of being critical of myself is not something I'm used to doing because I want to stop being critical, right? So one of the master tools I found within this skill of acceptance and surrender was learning how to enjoy. And if you ever looked up the definition of enjoy, it's actually something you enjoy, something you put into something. And in meditation, I had a thought that came to me, can I enjoy this feeling of being critical of myself, which I thought was kind of, you know, kind of weird at first. But there's a magical thing that happened. As I have been experiencing more and more in my recovery path, a feeling of judgment or something else that comes up and I habitually will go to a changing technique or using an affirmation, I had started to start learning how to take a couple deep breaths. You know, let me enjoy this feeling of criticalness, as weird as it sounds, as insane as it sounds. And as I start to learn, can I enjoy any feeling I have, regardless if it's uncomfortable? And I stop judging it as good or bad. I've given up the judge. Is it good or is it bad? Is feeling critical or feeling pleasure and feeling peaceful or feeling stressed, is one good or bad? No, it's my own internal judge. It says it's good or bad, right? The funny thing is, as soon as I judge it, I start this resistance and warring process against the feeling, right? To surrender that judge, I can then accept and enjoy any feeling I want. Can I enjoy stress? Can I enjoy pain? Can I enjoy? To a degree, it's an internal exercise for me, but there is a magical thing that happens. It dissolves so quickly when I accept it. And we've heard what we resist persists, right? Nancy gave a great, great metaphor about kayaking, you know, on a river where there's, what kind of holes are they called, Nancy?
Keeper holes,
which I absolutely loved when you're kayaking. And these holes are literally like little vortexes that suck you down to the bottom of an actual river going down, you know, the rapids. And I've actually seen them because I've kayaked. And the only way out, because if you try to swim out of them, it's kind of like a riptide. It pulls you back into the center and it exhausts you, and people drown and die from this all the time. But to swim through the center of the vortex of this keeper hole down to the bottom, because typically a river is what, maybe, you know, 7, 10, 12 feet. It's not that deep. But if you swim to the bottom and you hug the bottom, it'll allow you to release and come out of that vortex. So I loved that metaphor, because that's exactly the way it is with surrendering into the feeling is about enjoyment for me. regardless of what it is, I can choose to inject joy into stress. As crazy as the moment that I do that, it starts to dissolve and release in that moment of surrender and acceptance of that feeling instead of warring and resisting against it. Let's go into two. Distinction number two that I found, how are we doing on time? Great. Is in the area of our reaction patterns, our habitual reaction patterns, as I'm such a master at overreaction patterns. You can relate? Yeah. And reactions, where are our reactions coming from? Well, of course, I think it's this warring concept again for me, protecting myself from this source of insults or this source of degradation that I'm seeing my mother pattern everywhere when I'm in a certain state and reacting to her, not you, I'm reacting to her. And so much of what I found in the area of our reactions and our overreactions, in the Big Red Book, of course, it talks about, again, the process and the principle of surrendering our reactions, giving up habitually our reaction patterns. And for me, awareness seems to be, again, another just basic skill when I catch myself in an overreaction, because I don't sometimes really know when I'm overreacting. Ask my girlfriend. She'll tell you. You're overreacting. No, I'm not. What do you mean I'm overreacting? Who do you think you are? God, it's so funny how sneaky these little things are, aren't they? So what I found was, for me, the process of rendering our reaction patterns, the reaction patterns we might not like or enjoy so much or might not be the healthiest for our relationships in work or play or social or whatever it may be, has to do with our perceptions. See, because I like to call it, now there's been fancy names termed for it, but within our brain, I like to call it, there is an interpretation mechanism. This interpretation mechanism is a muscle. And this muscle, much like how a dog gets trained, the Pavlov theory, we were trained in many ways with this interpretation mechanism without knowing it from our parents, from our mom, our dad, our caretakers, whoever brought us up. And we trained this interpretation mechanism within our brain, within our emotional body. So, of course, we've heard about, the definition of insanity. Most people think it's the definition of doing something over and over again, expecting a different result. We've heard that one, right? It's actually not the definition of insanity. The real clinical definition of insanity is the ability to differentiate. The more sane we are, the ability that we actually have to differentiate different things in our lives, mentally and emotionally. That's why the insane person in the insane asylum is like they're seeing Martians everywhere, right? That's insane. But they can't differentiate who this Martian is, so they see them everywhere because there is no ability to differentiate. So what I found in my recovery, in glimpses of sanity, the small ones that I do have, is when I can differentiate. Is when I can look at this interpretation mechanism inside my head, and it's habitually perceiving attack. Anybody ever perceive attack, and everything everywhere some days? And, it's like, it's this muscle. You know what the funny thing is, though? We're really good at it, huh? So we can actually admire our ability to judge and to, it's another form of acceptance, by the way, is being able to admire our uncomfortable or not so attractive patterns, including our overreactions. And interpreting events is, I think, one of the master tools that we can have with overreactions. So the process of surrendering our habitual reactions is, first of all, about awareness. And it's definitely a skill. It's definitely a muscle that we need to work on every day, especially those of us in this path of recovery, where we have meditation, we have prayer, we have the Red Book, we have our meetings, we have the telephone, we have our support group and our fellow travelers. And through awareness each day, it can get better. Now, what's interesting about it for me, this is a little tricky thing about building a muscle, especially a mental or an emotional muscle, is doing it gently. Easy does it. Learning how to acknowledge my little wins and not even being too critical about my little weaknesses in these areas as we're practicing these tools, which I have to inject in there as well. So the interpretation mechanism, getting back to that, is something that we can control actually in a healthy way, or in a way when we surrender up our habit, we can start playing. I like the word play, by the way, playing with our interpretation mechanism. And how I get out of my critical pattern sometimes is when I start to play with my inner child. I start to play more as an adult. And of course, one of the most fun things that we can do, I think, is play. Whether you like to draw or paint or journal or write or play tennis or motorcycle ride, whatever it is, this is when our big kids come out, right? So the sense of play for me is the finesse with these deep personal growth tools, especially in the areas of perceptions, in the areas of reaction. So how can I play with this interpretation mechanism? So if I perceive somebody or I have an experience that's going on, and whether it be a, you know, personal relationship or a work relationship with a boss, I like to play with a couple of different ways of interpreting the event. You know, we were talking yesterday a little bit about, you know, ever have a, you know, a boss come into your office saying,
I need to talk to you.
You know, panic, you know, that reaction, like, what did I do wrong? You know, and they can be really happy with our work and they want to praise us, but my, of course, knee-jerk reaction is, I'm like, God, I'm in panic, I'm going to get fired, and there goes my life, and I'm going to be homeless, and I'm going to be, I mean, within 30, you know, 3 seconds, I'm on the streets, you know, and I can't afford it. I don't care how much money I have in the bank, it's gone. Whew, I start to sweat. They call that a slight overreaction. So what's been happening more and more is I've been able to take different situations and play with what they mean. Interpretation is assigning meaning to an event. That's what the mechanism does. You want to really take note of that, because we will assign meaning of what this event means habitually. Think, oh my God, I'm gonna get fired. It means I'm gonna get fired. It means I'm gonna go down the street. I'm gonna be homeless. So all of these habitual meanings are attached to our interpretation mechanism. So what I start to do is I start to play with different meanings. Again, like a big kid, I kind of look at, like, I don't know, like a Monopoly game sometimes, or Scrabble, and an event will come up, and in those rare moments of sanity again, I can play with what it's going to mean. It's like, am I going to get a raise? Am I going to play? Here comes that new motorcycle. Tahiti, here I come. And the funny thing is, this is how I talk to myself more and more now. Humor is such a great tool, isn't it? So I start to play with this interpretation mechanism. It's very subtle at first, but as we get a chance to play with meanings, what things mean, we will have different reactions. You know, somebody's coming down and they're being critical of me, and you ever notice on some days, no matter what anybody does, no matter what they say, they just don't affect you. Just like water off a duck's back. You all have those days, right? And then other days, the slightest little thing just tits me off. I could hear a few people relate with this one. So to interpret these events in a fun, playful way has been just such a master tool, again, to practice for myself each day. And regardless of what it may be, whether it be a work situation or somebody who's screaming and they're stressed out, if I'm feeling sane for a second and they're starting to scream, I can choose to react any way I want. I can choose to interpret that, as opposed to, of course, when you're taking it personally, right, which we tend to do once in a while, huh? Is not take it personally in those moments of sanity. As the muscle builds, I believe it is a muscle, it takes practice and skill like anything else. And I can play with the, what, you know, the way it means. And it's funny, because I have to give an example with Marianne Williamson. Years ago, before she became a best-selling author and was famous, I had a chance to spend some time with her at her house with some mutual friends and Louise Hay. And some individuals that went to one of her lectures in Santa Monica, California, and Marianne was talking something about, you know, a higher power and the principle of, you know, love and fear, and how whatever is not love is fear. And, you know, if somebody's reacting insane or crazy, they're just acting out some type of fear. And I just love that point of view. And simply when somebody is afraid and they're terrified, it's just calling for our love. It's calling for our love. So as she likes to say, we're ministers of love and teachers of love. We're ambassadors of love and light. And I love that paradigm, is being an ambassador of light. And after the lecture, somebody came up to her, and I was waiting to talk with her and say hello and connect. And a guy walked up to her and laid into her. And he had some very nasty, nasty things to say. And he was like, I can't believe you did this, and you did this, and you did this, and you said this. How could you think this? And where the heck did you come up with that? And he was laying into her, and I'm just like, oh my God. And I'm just looking at her, the way she's going to react, and I'm looking at him. And Marianne, she's sitting there with this look of just incredible love and compassion. She's looking at him with this incredibly loving, tender eyes, not reacting, and she's got this incredible, sane, peaceful, tranquil love oozing through her. And I'm looking, I go, what the heck is she doing? And I finally got it. She wasn't perceiving attack. What she saw, because at this time I was 19 years old, she was perceiving an incredibly terrified man that was calling for her love. She had the ability to turn an interpretation. I know from Marianne's past of how she was brought up that habitually she would interpret that as an act of attack and defend and defend and defend, like so many of us do. But it was amazing that through a simple training of our perceptions and building the muscle of this interpretation skill, we can see everybody as either loving us or they're in some kind of fear. And if they're in some kind of fear, they're calling for my love. They're calling for your love. So the power to interpret how we see different events really does affect our reactions. That's for sure. That is for sure. Humor, fascination, and admiration are other reaction and interpretation tools that we can use. We'd be fascinated by somebody's incredible attack, as opposed to defending against it. I can admire their passion for what they're talking about or what they're feeling. So I can play with these different interpretations and have different reactions as I surrender my old habitual interpretation muscle and start building it stronger day by day. Let's do a quick guided meditation. Let's take a couple deep breaths here. Let's take a deep breath in. If you close your eyes or keep them open, whatever is most comfortable, take a deep breath. Take another deep breath. Just do one more. I want to give you something that I call the ideal day exercise that I like to do in the mornings. And imagine today, let's use today after this event, after we do our closing circle, or it could be a day that you're going to work or going about your day-to-day activities. Imagine waking up, taking your shower, having your coffee, your breakfast, working out, whatever you do to start your day. And you decide to surrender your reactions today. All of our habitual reactions. We just kind of see them in our palms of our hands, kind of like a ball of energy, our habitual reactions. And imagine just kind of slowly, gently gliding them up in the air and saying, I give them up and I surrender my habitual reactions today. And as we go through our day, we pray for guidance to have healthier, more empowering, more playful interpretations of all of the events and all the experiences that we have today. I want you to imagine going to work or talking to a spouse or a partner. And imagine somebody confronting you about something, or maybe even yelling at you for something, but instead of defending, your interpretation mechanism kicks in and you see them as afraid. You perceive and see them and interpret the event that they're terrified about something. And in that moment, you realize they're calling for your love. They're calling for that love light, I like to call it, inside of you to help shine in their darkness. Imagine going through your day as an ambassador of love, because there's no fear in giving of our love. As you go about your work and you see your boss, your coworkers, or your employees, or your spouse and partners having a stressed or rough day, you realize they might be in fear. And as they act short or curt with you, you don't react. Instead, you interpret it again as a fearful, stressed out person that is what they really are at times. And they're calling for your love. Get another deep breath. And realize the more that we practice being this ambassador of light, of love, that we can put our love and our light into those dark, fearful places, as well as in ourselves. Okay, come back to the room. Next, I want to talk about higher power, surrender. How does it relate? And how do we relate surrender to our higher power? This is actually one of my favorites. It's one of the most challenging ones that I've had on my path, and definitely one of the most powerful tools of surrender, I think, that I've ever experienced, is having and developing a relationship more and more for myself with a higher power. And it's interesting because the old paradigm of, you know, the father, mother, God thing and father, God never worked for me because I was never brought up with a father. So when I heard people talk about higher power stuff, it never worked having this father concept because I never had that concept growing up. So it just kind of left me with kind of a blank feeling. But anybody remember Star Wars? Yeah. I love the Force. Okay, just there's just something for me that gives me a metaphor. It gives me something I could relate to, especially as a kid. You know, back when I'm 6, 7 years old, it was Star Wars and it was the Force. And it's funny because Lucas, when he put together, I heard a lot of interviews by George Lucas talking about how he came up with these metaphors for the Force and this infinite, intelligent, higher power that would be a non-judgmental, universal way that most people around the world could relate to it. And it was phenomenal because it really created a lot of, you know, cross-communication amongst religions and races and creeds. And of course, it became one of the biggest, you know, icon movies of all time. My son, my 8-year-old son, loves Star Wars, and it relates to even generations today, which I think is fascinating how it can be a metaphor for generation after generation. So higher power, you know, again, I guess we could sit and talk all day about defining who and what and where a higher power is. I'm going to share with you a few of mine that I'd found through my meditations, through my path. And for me, you know, this force or this infinite intelligence or this divinity, this divine force, regardless of what we like to call it, there's a lot of words, a lot of vocabulary to describe it. I like to use this universal force because I kind of see it, for me, I kind of see it kind of like gold pixie dust all around me. Around us, within you, within me, that's everywhere present. It's all-knowing, omniscient, everywhere present, omnipotent and all-powerful, all-wise. And since the father metaphor never worked for me because I didn't have a father and I couldn't relate to that, this sense of the force works because it kind of saw it as something inside us and something that I actually could have some semblance of surrendering to this force that was bigger than my ego. Thank God. And the funny thing is, for me, being brought up in the household like I was, like many of us, we have a self-concept that we have acquired and that was drilled into us and that was programmed into us about who we are. Of course, it creates our reactions, it creates our esteem, how we feel about ourselves. And this self-image and this self-concept that we've been working on through our work. We work through affirmations, we work through meditations, we work through having positive self-talk and the various recovery tools that we have and study and meetings and sharing our feelings with one another, where it was never allowed, allows us to start breaking the egg and breaking the shell of who we think we are and how we have to act or react. And much of self-image psychology revolves around this whole theory of self-image. Our self-image, how we perceive ourselves habitually, governs our behaviors and our reactions and our different interpretations that we've talked about, the interpretation mechanism, based on who we think that we are. And what I'd found was, for me, a self-image that I'd had and I've been working on, I could only work on so much of it myself. I mean, I can only do so many affirmations a day, and I can only take, quote unquote, so much action each day building it, until I came across one distinction that changed everything for me. I had one of my spiritual teachers on my personal growth path share with me, you know, Rob, what is God? I said, well, you know, my best definition of God is love. You know, it's a loving, infinitely present force of love that's everywhere present. And my real job is to become aware of its presence. Like in this room, I believe there's only infinite divine love. That presence is here. It's now, it's inside all of us. And my question for myself is, am I aware of it or not? Some moments, some days, I'm much more aware of it than others. But the more aware of this divinely infinite loving presence that I am, I get to experience it more. So I found awareness and attention is a big part of this game. And again, I like to put it in the playful game reference because I became very, very fond of games, positive, empowering, and fun, playful self-esteem games. And my teacher said, how do you feel that God thinks about you? What do you think is this divine, infinitely loving presence? What is its perception, an image of you? And he said, infinite love can't perceive anything but itself. Infinite love has perfect perception. And I went, And I said, so infinite love sees me as perfect now? And the answer is yes. So to surrender my self-image into a higher power's image of myself, ooh, that was a little scary. Still is every day. And the funny thing is, one of the most loving things, and I think truthful things that we can do for ourselves, is to see ourselves as a higher power sees us. Surrender our old self-image and surrendering our old belief about ourselves is one of the most challenging things I have. Because my judge with the anvil that was judging me and being a big dude up in the sky, sitting on a big chair and a throne, and used to be my childhood vision of God until I got kicked out of Catholic school. I got kicked out of catechism too, where you're doing Bible lessons, so I'm definitely an amateur on this, but I found this tool to be incredibly powerful, because in my meditations, and we're going to experience it in a minute, I'd found glimpses of the truth of this. And it's one of those inner experiences, you talk about a spiritual awakening, or having a chance to have a spiritual experience of surrendering my limited concept of myself, whether it be critical or bad. I think my biggest one, of course, was I'm not good enough, ever, in anything that I do. And surrendering that up to God and this higher power's vision of me and who I am in truth. So he had said something to me, and he had said probably one of the most uncomfortable and controversial statements and affirmations that you will ever make, Rob, and you play with it yourself, I'm not going to tell you if it's right or wrong, he said, was, I am perfect now. Spiritually perfect in a higher power's eyes. God, that's so foreign to the exact opposite, I think, to the way most of us were ever taught that who we are. And one of the lessons in this was surrendering, of course, that doubt and those negative critical perceptions of badness and not good enough. It's just the exact opposite of everything I was ever taught, or most of us was ever taught. And truly getting a chance to see and experience ourselves as a higher power sees you now. Because I believe that a higher power sees you as perfect, without flaw, beautiful, magnificent. Incredibly powerful, incredibly intelligent, genius within all of us. Just a beautiful being of light, I think, is how a higher power sees us. At least an infinitely loving, non-judgmental, and force of love, I think, cannot do anything but see us that way. So I want to give you an exercise, a couple quick tools and distinctions that I found to be really powerful and really fun to do in my meditations and visualizations I'm going to share with you that I found over the years to be incredibly, incredibly fun to do. So the first one I want to share with you is an exercise I do, and I share this, and I call this the perfection game. Okay? The perfection game. And this has to do with the inner judgment of our habitual judgments and judging what we see and what we do and what we experience every single day. And the perfection game, I've found, is one of the most empowering things I can do during the day for a quick uplift and a quick boost when I needed that quick boost in my step. And experiencing everything that I do, everything that you see during the day, label it as perfect. Who knows if it's true or not? I mean, this is a self-arbitrary thing. It's like, I see you right now, you're perfect. Now, I could see whatever I want. We can see a flaw. I could see something that's, I don't know, not quite tasteful. Or there's so many different judgments. And there's an old biblical saying, being an amateur on the Bible that I am, it says, judge ye a righteous judgment. And the funny thing is, we understand that perception is an inside-out thing, so whatever I see within you, I see within myself, right? Have we heard that before? What's the highest perception that we can have of ourselves or of somebody else? Perfect. Perfection. There was a book out called Perfection, Here, Now, Everywhere, Present, and I created this game based on this book, and it's a retraining of my perceptions, of strengthening that interpretation mechanisms and connecting me, I believe, with a higher power all in one swoop. And I call this the master game because it's the game that I like to play from hour to hour, moment to moment, at work or at play, whatever I'm doing. And it's amazing how energizing it is by judging a righteous judgment, because our perceptions create a feeling inside us. When we judge and we see beauty and perfection, we get to experience that beauty and that perfection within us. To play and practice this game every day is a pretty, pretty powerful, fun, engaging, and fascinating game. To start practicing seeing this perfection everywhere present on that golf course, just look outside for a second. I want you to look, just play this game with me. We're going to do the game real quick right here. Let's look outside, and I want you to see how much perfection that you could see out on that golf course. I mean, look at the gorgeous trees. I mean, the colors, the reds, the yellows, the orange. I mean, look at the symmetry of some of the trees, and you can see the beautiful natural growth and the perfection of that tree. of the various trees, of the grass, the gorgeous tones, the color changes, the hues, the greens, the reds, the yellows. And as you're seeing the trees and the grass and the greenery, I want you to say, God, that's perfect. It is I want you just to judge it as perfect now. See the beauty, see the perfection, it's right there. The choice is yours. And as you see that beauty and that perfection there, you can start to feel a little glimpse of it inside of yourself, right? Is it a muscle? Absolutely. Look at the mountains. Go all the way back to the mountains. Look at the gorgeous clouds coming over the mountains. And even within the rain, in a rainy day, it's like, oh my gosh, some people say, what a gloomy, horrible day. Other people, oh my God, it's gorgeous rain today. Right? Right? It's however we judge it, but a choice is ours. Those clouds are gorgeous coming over the mountaintop. It looks like, you know, it looks like a gorgeous painting. And as we experience that perfection and choose to play the perfection game, we get to experience this beauty more and more in our lives. Let's come back to the room. So what I'm going to do is give you an exercise and a meditation that I like to use before we wrap up. Something that I like to start my day off with, my ideal day exercise and meditation of seeing how I want to interact with different people throughout the day, how I want to treat myself throughout the day and build that muscle of self-image psychology and the visualization like Olympic athletes do. Someday I'd like to be an Olympic ACA-er. Someday. Just takes practice, as I tell my 8-year-old. It's like, how do you do it? You go, good, practice, daddy, practice, practice, practice. I go, that's so true. Keep reminding myself of that. So let's start and wrap up with this meditation that I'll leave you with as your final tool. And close your eyes or lower your eyes, whatever is most comfortable. Take another deep breath. Take another deep breath. Let's do one more deep breath. Now what I'd like you to do in front of you is I'd like you to see yourself as a child. Have it represent your child. You can put it right in front of you. You can hold it and cuddle it and coddle it in your arms if it's a little baby or if it's a 6-year-old or if it's a 10-year-old. You can hug him or her and tell him or her that I love you. I love you now. You are perfect. Just the way you are. You are perfect in every way. I love and I accept you as you are. You are beautiful. You are a divine, perfect child of God. Just marinate in this love for this child. Keep hugging this child as a symbol of loving yourself, of accepting yourself as the beauty and the perfection of God that you are. They say God doesn't make junk. And as you love and cuddle and hug this beautiful, perfect, I like to call it the wonder child. This incredible wonder child, this inner wonder child of loving ourselves, the child within us. We can remind ourselves to see the beautiful, perfect expression of divinity that we are every day. And the more that we acknowledge it ourselves in our day and other people, we get to experience it more and more with inside us, enriching the quality of our life with this beauty and this perfection. Now I want you to visualize yourself as you are today, the clothes that you're wearing, and see yourself right in front of your chair, looking back at you. I want you to see an image of yourself in the clothes, the shoes that you're wearing right now, and look at yourself. And look at yourself in your eyes as if you were looking in a mirror, but you're seeing yourself. And silently say to yourself, as you're looking at yourself, you are beautiful. You are an expression of perfection now. You are divinity in action. The truth without judgment, without criticism, without any of our past programming of our true self. What is our true self that we're recovering, that we're gaining back, is this beautiful, amazing, perfect person that you are right now. As you see yourself and you acknowledge this beautiful, incredibly perfect and divine being, tell him or her, I love you. I love you for who and what you are now. And I'm going to practice loving you every single day. Come back to the room. Well, that's all the time that we have this morning. Hopefully, I've been able to serve you and found some good distinctions that you can use and tools in your daily life. And hope everybody has an incredibly amazing year and rest of the event today as we do our closing circle. So we're going to wrap it up, and then the next 5 minutes, I believe, we'll be doing our closing circle. So thank you for letting me be of service.